Coming up on today's show.
And I think that whenever you're around gifted or great musicians, you learn something, you know, you pick things up from each other. I think that's how musicians, it's sort of like apprentice, you know, by just being around creative people, you pick up the way they work.
Do you see what I see? Do you feel what I feel for America?
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Remember, too, about the other free option for interaction with this show that I've been mentioning lately, Featured Up, which you can find a link to in this episode's description. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Malibu, California, my guest is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, music director, and record producer who is releasing a full-length album and a video for the title track featuring work by a Grammy-winning mix engineer who is also working on another album being recorded, which we will also hear about today. My guest has performed internationally and with some very notable names in music. Through Gold Record Productions, my guest has produced four artists with a singer that he is in a duo with. Together, they did a music video that has over 100,000 views on YouTube. You've been hearing the song that video is for, called For America. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Marcos Lopez Iglesias.
Hi, thank you for having me, Bruce, on this podcast. Looking forward to this interview.
Likewise, thank you. Thank you, Marcos. I appreciate you making time to talk with me today. There's a lot going on with you that we'll try to cover today, but first let's start by just having you talk about the song that was just playing called For America. What is the song about? Why did you write it? Maybe even about the video for it. Give us all those details.
Well, yeah, For America is a patriotic song, obviously. And I'm actually from the UK. And I was really taken aback by how patriotic Americans were. And living in England, you realize that all these different cultures live together harmoniously. And that's something that I feel is a strength for America. So I wanted to celebrate America and put out a song just to say it's the place of freedom. That's what it's been for me, a place of great opportunity. So it's really a celebration of the people that built this country. And I brought the idea to my writing partner, Lynn, and we wrote this song, the lyrics, on a plane going to Washington, D.C. So by the time we landed, we had the rest of the lyrics in place.
Wow.
And the melodies, and then we did the video.
Wow.
And we're actually getting ready to do a promotion for the 4th of July. We're hoping that we can chart the song on iTunes and do another promotion, because the wonderful thing about a patriotic song is it's perennial. So every holiday you can do a new campaign.
Now tell me, you said that you wrote the song on an airplane. So was it just the lyrics? I'm picturing you and her sitting there in an airplane and borderline singing, humming, a combination of the two, furiously jotting notes back and forth, exchanging ideas. Were there other passengers around you that knew what was going on, or am I maybe making this too dramatic?
Well, actually, the story of the song actually started in England, and I had, it was actually called For England.
Hmm.
And then when I came to America, I was working as a music teacher at Chaparral Elementary School. And I had a children's choir, and it was called For America. So I already had a melody and some lyrics. And Lynn has lived in Nashville, and she's a great writer. So I basically just sang the melody to her and showed her the lyrics. And then we crafted it, because she's a singer, so she's very good with melody. And so that was no problem. And you know, you have a lot of time on an airplane, so the time goes by quickly. So by the time we landed, we had, you know, improved the lyrics, worked on the melody, and ended up with what you can hear today, which is the song For America.
I think what I like about that story is it shows the audience who maybe don't have the opportunity to be exposed to songwriters that you literally can be struck, you can be moved to create a song anywhere at any time, including in this case, Marcos, on an airplane.
Yes, you know, I like to get inspired when I write, especially, I mean, I live near the ocean now, but I do love getting out into nature and getting inspired to write songs, you know, and that's the thing about melody and lyrics. You could pretty much write them any way you want.
Well, and the other side of it is people work on airplanes. We see people with their laptop out. I do this a lot myself. So why should it be any different for a songwriter to do his or her quote unquote work on an airplane than someone who's an architect, someone who's an accountant, someone who's a publicist, the list goes on. So it's a great way to start the show. For those just being introduced to you, tell us about your start into music, how you began singing and the instruments that you play and how you chose those.
Well, going back, I was actually born in Oxford, England. And then we moved to Sheffield, England, which is a lot of famous groups came from Sheffield, Def Leppard and Joe Cocker and the Human League. So I was part of a music scene in Sheffield. My grandmother had given my mom a guitar. So I was introduced to that at a very early age. And then when I was around 16 years old, my mom bought my brother a drum kit and me an electric guitar. But I had so much fun on the drums, I ended up playing those more. Then my mom became my manager. I was in a group called Yabu, and we would tour around. It was a jazz funk with horns. It was a great band to play drums for. Hmm. And we would tour England, and we actually got to record on Richard Branson from Virgin Records. He had a barge in London at a studio, and we recorded there.
Wow.
And Danny Cummins was the producer. And so we did some great things, and that's how I got my start. And then pretty much just loved drums and got involved in studio work and jazz drumming and jazz funk and different styles of drumming. I was really just all about the drums.
But you said that you were given a guitar and decided that your brother was playing drums and you really took to those instead. You do play guitar. So at some point, did you revisit the guitar?
Yes. What happened is a friend of mine, he gave me a four-track. Actually, I think I may have bought it from his wife, if I remember. It was a Fostex. And so I picked the guitar back up again to actually, you know, get some chords. And another friend of mine would do some vocals. And then he wasn't able to do any singing. So I ended up doing the singing myself. I was pretty much self-taught, with the headphones on, singing into the microphone and learning how to sing. And the guitar came back to me very usefully to write songs because I needed some kind of chordal instrument to write with. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Now, getting back to your mom was your manager, you toured around England, you recorded at Richard Branson's place. What age were you when all that was going on?
Wow. I was only 17 years old.
Wow.
17 years old. Yeah. So it was a great start. And I won a drumming competition in England, Drummers Alliance, it was the name of that. And so I think, you know, rhythm was something I was probably gifted with. Mm. And I remember being very young and hearing somebody play the drums across the street. And I said to myself, I want to do that, you know. So it was something that was, it just looked so much fun. And it's still fun. I still love playing drums. It's one of the, you know, it's a very physical thing, but I feel like it is the foundation of music, you know, the rhythm, getting that rhythm really right.
Well, and while we're talking about that instrument, and as long as we're turning back the clock, I saw clips of you playing drums with Duran Duran and of you playing drums with Limahl. How did you get to those high-profile opportunities? Clearly, there was a little bit of momentum with what you described with touring around England. Your mom was the manager, recorded Richard Branson's play, but this is a whole nother level.
Yes. Well, if I look back, I was in a band after Yabu, And we had a manager who owned a famous theater called the Lyceum in Sheffield. So whenever groups came through, I could get backstage and meet them. And I actually met Lamal at the theater. And when we lost our lead singer, I asked Lamal if he wanted to sing. Mm. And he, at the time, he had left Kajagoogoo and he was number one with Too Shy Shy, the song, yeah. Or Shy Shy Tawai. Yeah. And he said, well, actually, I need a drummer. I'm going on tour and I'm going to be doing some dates in Europe. And so, you know, I said, well, that's great. I can help out. And the next thing, they picked me up in a limousine and I was with the keyboard player from Talk Talk and a producer called Dee Harris from a band called Fashion. And then we went to on the plane and there was Julian Lennon and we went to this big festival in Germany with, U2, Duran Duran. There was everybody in the 80s pretty much was playing there.
Gosh. It
was Tommy's Pop Show in Dortmund and 15,000 people. So Lamal was number one in Germany. So we played Brennan, we played Dortmund, Cologne. And that was my introduction to Duran Duran. So it just worked out that my schedule with Lamal was coming to an end. And their management asked Lamal's management if I'd be able to step in and do some things with them. And so they gave me a cassette to learn the song. And you know, and then I ended up with Duran Duran. And it was pretty crazy because going into a limousine and screaming girls and this whole high life of hotels. And it was another world. And I mean, I was 21 years old. So that's a lot to do. It happened very, very quickly.
Okay, so having heard all that then and all the success that you are enjoying, I have to wonder, when and why did you move here to America?
Well, actually, my life took a different path and I ended up, there was an opportunity to move to Italy and to work with Christian gospel music over there.
Hmm.
So I actually went to Italy and I was working in the Christian gospel scene, which wasn't very developed back then. So I was producing artists and worked at Intervision Recording Studios. So I lived there for 3 years and I really loved Italy. And then an opportunity came to work for the Continental Singers, which is an American Christian singing group. And they basically put together choirs and also we had actors and bands. So we would put this together to tour around America and the world. So I was based in Ventura, California. So that's how I actually came to America. And I had the good fortune to meet a lot of great people through that organization. In fact, a lot of Christian artists got their start with the Continental Singers. So I was very fortunate to have that experience.
You're being humble. I know there's one name that you don't even have to be a fan of his music to know, but I don't want to steal your thunder. Tell us about at least the one that I know that you got the opportunity to work with, if not others.
Well, yeah, the great Andre Crouch.
Yeah.
I had the title track, Revival Rain, and I had visited his church here in Los Angeles, and he invited me up on stage, and I sung the song. And the next thing I knew, he was singing a choir part, and then I got shivers. I got goosebumps, and I was like, wow. And so it sounded so great. We then went to his studio at home, and he brought in the Andre Crouch choir, and there was actually a choir from Norway visiting, so some of the Norwegian choir and the Andre Crouch choir came together and sung the choir parts to this song. And so I feel very fortunate to have worked with him and to have him, you know, do the choir arrangements and be so encouraging of, you know, this Christian CD. And it was a real privilege. He was like, I guess you could call him father of gospel music, you know, because he was really able to cross barriers for white and black audiences, which is something back then that he was probably one of the first ones to do that.
But I want to back up to the time that you spent in Italy, because you had just finished telling us all about these pop groups, right? You're talking about Duran Duran, you're talking about Kajagoogoo, you're talking about everybody who was really at the top of the charts back then, and all of a sudden you go to Italy and you change to Christian music. So fill in the blanks there. Was there some major life event? Is it, oh, I've just always been a devout Christian? Or is it, I was playing pop music and I enjoyed Christian music, I just didn't perform it? How does that happen?
Well, I had pretty much of a crisis, I would say, of just, why am I here, you know? Asking questions and looking into different religions and different faiths. And there was a singer called Cliff Richard.
Yeah.
In England. And he had a free book. They said, if you're interested in Christianity, because he had become a Christian, send off for this book. So I sent off for the book. And it started to make a lot of sense to me. So I would say I gave my life to Jesus Christ and became born again. And I just followed the prayer in the book. And I got so much peace, you know. It filled me with so much peace. Up until then, I didn't have the greatest, because my dad had left home when I was younger, and I didn't have, and music was really a solace. It was a thing that would bring comfort to me. And I didn't have the greatest childhood, but when I received Christ, you know, I found peace. And so I thought, you know, my life went on a different path, but music was still part of it. And in fact, singing in church is where I really got better as a singer, you know? And so being exposed to gospel music, and you know, there's a lot of good players as well. And so that was something that really has been with me. My faith has really guided me and been part of what I do musically, you know. And I mean, I do all kinds of music, but this is a music that I love and understand and has been part of my journey.
And for those that don't know, Cliff Richard, I believe his big song was Devil Woman. He, I think, even did a song with the late Olivia Newton-John, and very, very, very accomplished. So I certainly know the name Cliff Richard. And folks, if you don't know who he is, by all means, take the time. It's worth the G-O-O-G-L-E. I would say the actual word, but then my phone perks up waiting for me to ask it a question. Marcos, let's talk about the new album. It's called Revival. When will it be out? How many songs are on it? Where was it recorded? And talk also about the decision to press vinyl for physical album units too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think the vinyl thing is like a revival, if you could call it that. Because, you know, we've come full circle. And I always loved the sound of tape, and I love vinyl. And I used to build speakers in England and have a great turntable and cartridges and get into the tubes and all that. And I really loved the sound. And I think people like to own a physical product. Not only that, it's having the ability to put who played on the album in all the details, photographs. You've got more room for the artwork.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays with the streaming, people like to own something. And I think that so my decision is really, you know, to give people something they can own. And I just love the format as well. And so the album actually started in 2010. And I had the songs. There's 9 songs. And I had a manager back then. And so we were working it, and I was touring around and performing the songs and recording, and actually started with Bob Horn. And I was diagnosed with colon cancer. And so again, my faith came into play, because I turned to, you know, my faith to get healing and to overcome the cancer, because I didn't want to really do the traditional treatments, because, you know, that just really wasn't something I believed in. And so I wasn't able to fully market the album. And then my manager passed away. And so we had done all this work. And then so I just wanted to revisit the album. I felt like it deserved to be out there for people to hear and be encouraged by it. And so Bob Horn said he could, you know, remix it, refresh it for 2024.
Wow.
The 9 songs, yeah. And then so we've been doing that, and Lynn's been adding some vocals. And so it's sounding really great. We're going to do Dolby Atmos, and we're using some of the DW Fern and Hazel Rig equipment. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to really be able to put that out and make it available, you know, because no matter the hardships you go through, if you have a dream for music and you want to reach people, you want to communicate, then you just keep going, you know, You just don't have the attitude where you stop still. You've just got to keep going and pressing through, and it will get done. It will get done. You know, you just have to have that intention. That is what actually helped me get through the cancer, is having the intention to continue and having a purpose, you know, because when you're a musician, an artist, you know, you want to communicate your music, you want to encourage people. And so that gives you a big reason to continue, is for people, you know, is to be able to communicate your ideas. And, you know, obviously I feel that this album takes you on a journey, a spiritual journey. And so I feel like it, you know, it can help a lot of people. And so that gives me a reason to continue to do it in 2024 and bring this out this year. So we're almost complete now. We're almost complete with just finalizing everything. And then we'll probably do the Dolby Atmos mixes and then run it through the DW Fern VT7 and VT5 on the stereo bus. So, and then we're going to do the vinyl. So I'm really excited. Probably that's going to be on all platforms. It will be available digitally as well.
And it's sounding like, what, maybe end of summer release?
Yeah, I think that's realistic. I'm going to time it with the video. There's a video for the title track that's got the Andre Crouch Choir in there. So, yeah, I'm going to time it for the end of the summer, I think, because we're pretty much wrapping it up now. So I think get everything in place, all the marketing, and I think that's a good target date.
Yeah, and for the audience, I'm looking right now as Marcos is talking. I'm looking at Spotify, and you can find on there 2011 Revival Rain is the title of that release, Marcos Lopez Iglesias. So I think, audience, it's clear you're understanding what the difference is between that release 13 years ago and what Marcos is describing that is about to come out in a few months. So I'm going to encourage you as the interview goes along to, of course, keep up with him online so that you can get the updates that he publishes about how that one is progressing. But separate from that project, Marcos, is The Story of Love, Volumes 1 and 2, which you're also doing with the same Grammy-winning mix engineer, Bob Horn. What is the status of that project? Meaning, where on the timeline is it as far as writing, recording, mixing? Is there by any chance a projected release date for that one?
Yeah, well, actually, a lot of those songs I recorded around the time of Revival Rain. And again, you know, when you get the news you have cancer, you know, you can't really, that's a life thing there that slows things down. But all the songs are mostly there. So I'm going to revisit those. We have some mixed already. A lot of mixed, and it's a nice album because I'm going to feature Lynn as well, because it's going to be duets. So it's going to be, you know, The Story of Love is going to bring Lynn in on that one, and I have the artwork. So it's actually, I have so many songs, it's probably going to be a double album. Mm-hmm. And so once we're done, so I'm thinking maybe 2025, bring that album out. And I think for me, I like to work with albums because I feel like it is an artistic statement and a group of songs that you wrote at a certain time and that work together well. And I just love the idea of the album, and because it really helps you focus on finding the best songs and making sure every song is good and stands up on its own. I really didn't like the idea when CDs came out that there was maybe one or two good songs and everything else was filler, and then people felt, oh well, they, you know, they're paying so much for a CD, $20-something, or, you know, how much was it, $15 or $20 back then, and they're only getting two good songs. So I wanted to have, you know, every song could be a potential single, or at least work together as a group of songs, because I really like, you know, Pink Floyd. You know, they would take you on a journey. I love the idea of an album where you can start and be taken somewhere on this journey and really understand who the artist is, the songwriting style, and who this, you know. And so to me, the album allows you to be at your creative best, you know, where sometimes, I mean, And I know we've kind of gone back to the 50s with the single, which is really where everything's at. But I think that people are looking for artists to do albums, to see who the artist is, because I think it really, in 9 or 10 songs, you can really find out what the artist is about, what they're trying to say, what their unique perspective is on the world, and how they're using music to tell their story, and hopefully that will connect with people. So I really feel like there's a revival of the album, you know?
Yeah, nicely said, nicely said. I want to go back, though, to a statement that you made about a cancer diagnosis, and it really slows you down. I would think, and clearly, I hope you understand the spirit with which I'm asking this question, but I would think that someone who is a recording artist would get a cancer diagnosis and say, this is so serious that I need to go full speed ahead and get this recording project wrapped up because, I mean, granted, tomorrow is not guaranteed for any of us, but when you get a cancer diagnosis, you think the worst. And so the tendency would be to say, I need to get this done as quickly as I can. At the same time, I do fully understand, well, Bruce, you've obviously never been diagnosed with cancer because it knocks you for a loop, the treatments, the way you feel, everything you go through. But was there any thought that way, Marcos, of I need to hurry up and get this done because of this diagnosis? Or is it you already gave the answer, Bruce, medically you just can't speed things up?
Well, I think for me, because the songs on Revival Rain were recorded, and then most of the songs we had recorded on the Song of Songs album. But it was the marketing. It was actually the marketing because I was involved with alternate treatments. And actually, I did turn to my faith and I used the Bible. There's some healing scriptures in there that I used. And actually, when I went back to the doctor, he looked at my colon and said, this is like a baby's colon, it's pink and I can see the veins and the blood. I mean, this never happens. Mm. So evidently, miracles happen.
Amen.
But here's what happened. My manager at the time had said, well, concerned, you should go get a colonoscopy. I said, I didn't want to. So she asked me, finally, I went to get the colonoscopy and they punctured my colon.
Oh.
So then, so this was another setback into the recorded thing because then they had to resect my colon and, I went into septic shock. So it was an emergency surgery. So that took me about a year to recover from that. And then my manager passed away. So you have all these setbacks. And as you can have the greatest product, but if you don't market it, nobody's going to hear about it.
Yeah.
And, so my mind was really on in that second time with the perforated colon. I wasn't really able to market it. So I feel like the time is now.
Yeah.
And especially now we've got, we got the duo. I'm in the duo as well with Lynn Lavigne, and we have my solo record. So I feel like now's a great time. And, it's interesting because artists always reinvent themselves, they never really quit. And I love this saying that art is its own reward.
Mm.
So there's something very rewarding about music and art and healing too. And so I've always taken that approach to it. So, and I think there's a time in for everything and a season for everything. So I just believe that now's the time for the America song and for this album and it all coming together because, you go through all those experiences in life and it helps you become a better songwriter, informs what you're saying.
Mm.
You take all those life experiences and put it into music. And that's a really, truly a gift because we're able to touch people emotionally and at a soul level that, nobody else can really do that. So I think music is so powerful. And so I really respect it and try to use it for the good of people.
Fantastic. Wow. Amazing, amazing story. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Malibu, California, by singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, music director, and record producer Marcos Lopez Iglesias. Visit his official website at musicbymarcos.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard Marcos talking about the new album titled Revival. Keep up with him online for news, not only about that release, but for, as you heard him say probably next year, The Story of Love, Volumes 1 and 2 as well. By the way, last December, he even released a Christmas song, which you can find on Spotify. Follow Marcos on there and on social media, and stick around because we're going to talk about his duo partner, and then I will also be giving you a website where you can go to see more about the two of them together and what they're doing under that banner. Meanwhile, at the very, very beginning of today's episode, I mentioned different ways to write to me, but why don't we just have an actual phone conversation? The OWL app allows us to do that, yet maintain a level of privacy, meaning not having to give out a phone number. Moreover, the OWL app, and by the way, that's OWL like the bird, except two W's and two L's. The OWL app allows you to meet people from a wide variety of industries. I was on there today, and I saw people who do things like travel agent, IT, holistic health, tax planning, psychology, accounting, app development, and so much more. Yes, I know LinkedIn offers you similar professional connection opportunities, but OWL lets you have actual voice calls with professionals that you would like to meet. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section and then go to the article titled Help Now a Phone App Call Away. I have details in there about OWL, which is free to download. So I've even got links there to get it from the App Store or Google Play. You will also see my invitation code, which is a required field as you're setting it up on your phone. Get on OWL and then call me and let's talk through there. Marcos, take us through your songwriting process. What is your approach?
Well, I love the acoustic guitar. And actually, I just got a guitar from Martin. I'm endorsing Martin Guitars, and it took them over a year to build this one. It's an OM42. Mm. I love vintage guitars, too. I have a Guild M20 from 1958 and a 12-string from 1977, F412. And really, the guitar takes me on a journey. But I normally start with something that, a life experience or something that's moved me. Because I find that if I don't find a topic that I can resonate with or something from my life experience or something that moved me, I don't see the song through. And so I think it gives me the impetus to see the song through to completion if the subject matter is meaningful enough. So I don't have such a great time writing to a formula or just, you know, to make money, as it were. But I feel like music is an emotional thing for me, and it's always been cathartic and very healing. So I try to use music in that manner, as you'll hear on the song Forgive and Walk Free at the end. But so if I start with that concept and then go with the guitar, I normally would do the melody and the chords at the same time, and then sometimes I'll go back and change the melody. So there's the emotional part for me initially, and then the craft part would come in as, okay, what kind of song is this going to be? You know, is it going to have a chorus? Is it, you know, a verse? Is it going to have a pre-chorus, an intro, outro? You know, all those kind of things, the technical side of things. But I feel like if I can sing and play at the same time, then I'm communicating in the best way. And I mean, I love James Taylor. I mean, you know, the way he plays and sings, and singer-songwriters that are able to, whether it's a piano or voice, but really, you know, if the song sounds great on piano and voice, if you listen to Paul McCartney, you know, yesterday, and on the guitar and the voice, it, you know, it moves you. So I do like music that moves you or brings you to tears or, you know, makes you feel something. And I feel like a good song should stand up on one instrument, and then you can produce it in any genre you want, because, you know, there's many songs that have been produced in different genres. But so that's kind of really my philosophy. And so sometimes I'll, you know, I try to get out into different locations, get out into nature. And I'm also using different tunings. So there's a tuning on the guitar called Dadgad, which is basically the E string goes down to D and the B string goes down to A. And I believe that Jimmy Page came up with this tuning when he went to Africa and was trying to play with the African musicians. Could have been Jimmy Page, or there was another blues guy in England that may have started it, but it's such a great tuning. And I really love that tuning. And so I've kind of learned most of the chords in that tuning, and there's no third in it, so it really opens the music up. And then there's another tuning I use, which is basically, I believe this one is a C tuning, C, G, C, G, C, D. And I heard that it's called drunk man's tuning because everything you're playing, it sounds good. It's a really great sounding tuning. Now, I'm not sure if the Dadgad was a blues guy. John Mayall, it could have been John Mayall. But I love that tuning. It's opened up the guitar for me. And I'm a big fan of Peter Gabriel.
Mm.
And so what I do with the guitar is I try to get different sounds because I kind of got bored with the standard tuning. So I use shub capos. So I have like split capos. So I use the Dadgad tuning with split capos to try and invent new chords and new sounds. Almost like, I know Joni Mitchell used a lot of open tunings, and I really gravitated towards them because you almost get like a piano effect with the guitar. Mm. It's so nice, and it sustains with those lower notes. When you turn down the E to D, it seems to sustain more. So I try to create, you know, different kind of sounds, and that kind of can inform the melody. But I typically start with a feeling, an idea, and then I try to get a really strong title. Because I feel like everything in the song should lead to that, and then people can find the song, and so it kind of makes sense. I mean, I've been in Nashville, and they're really good at crafting songs, and then the English way is really sometimes with the lyrics to be ambiguous, like David Bowie and also Peter Gabriel, and sometimes you can let people bring their own interpretation to the song. And I think that's valid. I mean, I think that's just as valid as the Nashville approach. I mean, it's good to know both because Nashville's very good at structure and telling a story.
Yeah.
And they're able, in one line, they're able to say so much in one line. And it's a real skill. But I also believe that if you let the listener interpret the song and bring their own interpretation of what they think it means, I think that is art. Because if you go to a museum and look at art, I mean, everybody's going to have their own interpretation of that piece of art. Well, what does it make you feel? So that's something private between the person enjoying the art. And I feel like, you know, music could be because, you know, poems are written down, but you're reading them. You can slow down. With music, it's auditory, so you're listening to it. Mm. So words have certain sounds.
Yeah.
And so you can play around with that as well. So I think I try to use both approaches, you know, on songwriting. Just depending on what I want to say and the feel of the song and everything. But, you know, growing up, the Beatles were a big influence on me. I mean, just because they had such a range of styles, not only with the songwriting, but the recording process, they were so inventing new ways of recording. And so that really opened up a lot of ideas, you know. And so I really feel like there are no limitations with art, with music, you know. And I think a lot of that is to do with growing up listening to the Beatles from England, you know. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't really escape the Beatles in England.
That's great perspective. And it leads to, you wear a lot of hats, singer, songwriter, guitar player, drummer, music director, record producer. As a result, I know you've built up a recording philosophy in terms of gear that you use.
Yeah, you know, over the years, well, first of all, being a drummer, you know, if the rhythm's not right, if it's not, if the foundation's not right, you can't build the house. So I think a lot of drummers think like producers. And so it's a natural, because when you're on the drums, you've got the whole band. And so you're kind of in the back, but you're commanding, in a sense, the accents and building that foundation for everybody. Because if the drums doesn't have a feel, the music doesn't have a feel. And so, you know, going back to the Fostex, tape machine, you know, and building up equipment. And I've always had some kind of recording equipment because to capture ideas, I feel it's so important. And then I realized that, you know, with computers and then there's software and then there's bells and whistles, I call it. I really felt like when I went on Pensado's place where I met Wes Dooley, I think it's episode 192. And I played on there and did some drumming for them. And I was really impressed with Wes Dooley and the ribbon microphones. Because when I tried them on drums, they weren't harsh at all. They were very smooth sounding. And so what happened is we were doing a song of Lynn's called Tell Me It's Over in the studio. And we had rented expensive C-12s and Telefunken 251. This was a vintage C-12, but we were still like, oh, there's, you know, it's, Lynn has a very powerful voice too. So I was sitting there and I said, you know what? The ribbon microphones sound so great. Let's try that on your voice. And we did. And lo and behold, it was so smooth and it fixed everything.
Wow.
And then Bob Horn loved it. So I ended up buying two R44, AEA R44s, because I realized, you know, the sound is really, starts with the microphone. And then it goes through the mic pre, and I was talking to Wes Dooley, and he told me, because I said, I love tubes. And he goes, the best tube guy in the world is D.W. Fearn. So I called up D.W. Fearn, and I ended up talking to the Hazelrig brothers. And he said, oh, have you heard about our new preamp? And I said, no, I've not heard about it. And he said, oh, well, Eric's going to be in town. You know, we'll let you try one out. So I actually... I believe I got the compressor as well, the VNE tube compressor. So we went to Bob's and I took my other preamps. I had an Avalon and all Bob's preamps. So we were testing out everything. When we plugged in the R44 with the Hazelrig, the VLC and the VNE, it was so incredible. It was like you didn't have to sing, you know, you could just hear everything in such a way that you weren't over singing, you weren't under singing, it was just right there. So you actually didn't have to stack so many vocals, you didn't have to. A lot of times I'll do like six takes of, you know, maybe 10 takes of vocals and then we'll comp it. We didn't have to comp, it just sounded so great and so natural. More so like on speech, it was sort of more relaxed and into it. So I was like, you know what? My recording philosophy is start with a great microphone, and then a great mic pre, and then a great compressor. And the way that the VNE works is different to other compressors and is very, very smooth and very musical sounding. And so that was just an amazing mic chain. And then Bob Horn was like, this is my favorite mic chain. So I guess my philosophy is saying, you know, it's worth trying to get the best mic chain, because I record a lot of acoustic instruments. So we'll record live strings, acoustic guitar. So I really like ribbon mics. And the great thing about ribbon mics is with the VLC, you can get that condenser sizzle by just putting it's got an air band, it's got an EQ on there. I think the compressor is pulse width modulation. That's how the VNE works. And it's so smooth, it doesn't even sound like there's a compressor on it. So basically, if I go to do vocals, I'll bring my mic chain with me and I know that's gonna sound amazing. And see, to me, you know, interfaces do have a sound, so try to get the high level ones. But basically, if you're recording in Pro Tools or Logic, it's a tape machine. You know, it's just a recording device. But really, your sound is coming from that microphone, those mic pre's. So try to get the best you can, because, you know, recording in the box for me, or recording using the mic pre from the interface, we ended up over-EQing and trying to fix stuff, but it sounds harsh and you ended up going, there's something wrong, even after we went into mastering and tried to fix it. But if you fix it at the source, and so I believe, I mean, I know sometimes money is an issue, but they make ribbon mics at different price levels and they make tube gear at different price levels, but I try to get out of the box as much as I can. And then I also try to use live instruments, because I feel like with live instruments, a song doesn't date so much. You know, if I'm using bells and whistles and stuff, and then I'm going, okay, well, that's going to sound dated. And to me, if you've got a live player, you can put more emotion in the song. You know, and I mean, for instance, I love live strings. they're very emotional for me. So that's what I try to do. And in fact, on that song for America, every instrument is a live instrument. There's nothing sampled. There's nothing. Oof. It's live strings.
Fantastic.
Live drums. Yeah. Yeah. And so
Fantastic.
That's kind of the approach. And I feel like then the music will live, and it almost becomes like, oh, it just, because if you listen to a lot of the great records from the 50s, I mean, they're classics, right? I mean, you know, real instruments, and they just sound good today. I mean, they sound as good today as they did then, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's great perspective. I want to shift gears here because you have mentioned her a few times. Tell us about Lynn Lavigne. How did the two of you meet and get started doing music together?
So we were both hired to lead worship at an event. And so I met Lynn there. And then she had been on the road with Kathy Mattea, which is a famous country
yeah.
singer. Yeah, she was a background vocalist. And she sung with the Glenn Miller Orchestra. And what struck me about Lynn was she has a 4-octave range. So she started out singing with her father, doing harmonies. But she actually could have been an opera singer. One of her teachers was training there. So she has that background. But she also has the ability to sound like Aretha Franklin, Janis Joplin, and the rock thing. So she's very gifted vocally. So, and then it wasn't only her vocal ability, but she had lived in Nashville for 7 years. So she understood songwriting. And plus, she's got a great ear for mixing and recording. So we started to, I think one of the first songs we wrote together was Sometimes You Just Need a Good Country Song. And then we just started writing, and it was sort of like a natural, because I think if you have a writing partner, the writing process can speed up, and you can, when you think of Lennon and McCartney, I really love their songs. And if you listen to Lennon's songs on his own, they're different, and Paul McCartney's songs on his own. But the combination of the way they look at music, like John Lennon was very different in his approach than Paul McCartney. That combination was great. And I think it's the same with musicians. You know, when you find that magic, that's what makes Led Zeppelin to me Led Zeppelin, because it's John Bonham and those guys together. And the Beatles, you have a certain magic. I think musically, I have that magic with Lynn. Mm. And so when you find that, it's great. And then the other challenge is it caused me to improve as a vocalist, because when you're working with someone, I mean, Lynn is a vocal teacher. So I think my vocals became more on speech.
Mm.
And some of the great singers like Frank Sinatra and Stevie Wonder were on speech, and it's so much more natural, and you don't damage your voice. And so one of the challenges is when you're choosing songs for the duo is finding the right key, that it's not too low for me, and it's not too... Lynn's got an amazing range, but she likes to be in a range where she can be more expressive, so not too low for Lynn. And so we have to find the right key, and certain songs will suit the duo. And so it's been a great experience sort of arranging songs.
Because
certain songs will work for the duo, because we're telling a story, and you've got, you know, in this case, we've got, you know, male-female duo, and we've got two kinds of different voices. Because I've got more of a, I guess my kind of voice is more on the sort of Sting and Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins. And Lynn can do Mariah Carey, you know, and she, you know, she can... Celine Dion. I mean, you know, so it's a different kind of thing. So trying to make that work. So we're trying to get some songs that really feature Lynn's vocals, and then some that feature us together. And it's been really challenging for me, and improved my vocals a lot working with Lynn. And you know, I think there's a lot to be said for collaborating, because I always used to write my songs, you know, myself. And I think that whenever you're around gifted or great musicians, you learn something, you know, you pick things up from each other. I think that's how musicians, it's sort of like apprentice, you know, you, by just being around creative people, you pick up the way they work, their workflow. And some people are so naturally gifted with their instincts in music that you pick it up. And so I've always tried to work with gifted people. Mm. And, you know, it just, because it just makes it fun, you know, it just makes it fun because it's effortless, really. It's almost like, you know, with Lynn, it's almost like she doesn't think about it. She can harmonize. She's actually singing a lead vocal, but she's flowing, weaving the harmony up and down, and you won't even know it.
Wow.
And in fact, when she got the Kathy Mattea gig, she learned all the male parts and all the female parts, harmony parts. She learned all those. And she went in there without music, and because Kathy said, "Where's your music?" I said, "I don't have it." And, you know, she was able to sing she got the gig.
Mm.
Some people have that, that photographic memory.
Yeah.
Lynn was singing at 3 years old, so to her it's like speaking. She can just remember melodies, and that's why she doesn't listen to music a lot, because you know she doesn't want to plagiarize it, because she'll it'll get in there. And so I think that I enjoy working with people that are gifted, because I think that the end result is something unique. I think that's coming from England, we have probably a different approach to music, and I value the English way of approaching music, but the American approach too. And there's so many great musicians in America, you know, and there's definitely American sound. And I think one of the English strengths is bands, you know, we have a strong history of bands. And I think also we're influenced by Celtic music, Irish music.
Mm.
In fact, British folk music, when I went to the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles, the roots of country music go back to English folk music. And so that was kind of interesting, because I've always loved that. And I think maybe that's why I like Dad Gad as well, because it allows you to have those kind of Celtic melodies for me, you know, and maybe they're a part of where I live, because I definitely think that where you grow up does inform who you are as a musician.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's got to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, and that's why I appreciate Peter Gabriel, because he takes his influences from so many different cultures that he's open to different instruments as well. And I like that. I like to explore different instruments as well, and different music from around the world, because I think every culture has a unique way of expressing music.
For sure. And folks, after everything that you just heard Marco say about Lynn Lavigne, in a couple minutes I'm going to be giving you the online destination so you can go to the website for the duo act. We are going to close with a song that is just Marcos, though. This is solo Marcos Lopez Iglesias. It's a song called Forgive and Walk Free. Marcos, before I let you go and I play that song, tell the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Yeah, well, this song, again, was it was actually somebody that I had to forgive. And I put it into a song. My way of forgiving someone was writing a song about it. And, you know, when I had finished the song, I felt a whole lot better about, you know, forgiving that person. And so I put it through into a song. And I feel like it's a very personal song. And also, I think it can inspire people to consider forgiving, because I think that at the end of the day, it helps us in our health, you know. Because definitely holding on to negative emotions and feelings is not healthy. So I think that my main understanding of forgiveness is it's more for us. And it doesn't mean you approve of what someone did, but you're just not allowing them to poison you, you know, get a bitter heart that's kind of like holding you up. So it's just good sometimes to be able to forgive and let things go and move on and to understand that, you know, we're all human beings, we'll make mistakes, but at the end of the day, don't hold on to grudges or to things from the past, because we have a future, we have a great future ahead of us, and we have great songs to write and great opportunities and things to say, so why be held back? So I think this is really, really a song to help people break free from hurts from the past and things
Very
that
nice.
They probably need to forgive.
Very nice, yeah, and a great way for us to end. Folks, I'm going to play that in just a minute. It'll be a great inspirational way to close out this episode. But Marcos, first, let me say thank you. Great to meet you. I appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, music director, and record producer, Marcos Lopez Iglesias. Do visit his official website at musicbymarcos.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talk today about the album Revival. Keep up with Marcos online for news, not only about that, but also for The Story of Love, Volumes 1 and 2, which you heard him say is probably next year. Remember that I had also mentioned It's Christmas, a song that he put out last December, which is available on Spotify. Give him a follow on that platform as well as on social media. And then the website for his duo act is lynnandmarcos.com. And that's L-Y-N, by the way, lynnandmarcos.com. And they do have links there for their social media as well. Do let Marcos know that you heard him and his music. I now hear this entertainment. I say it every week, but I mean it. I do truly hope that you like the show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Marcos and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net. And then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 543. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Marcos Lopez Iglesias. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Forgive and Walk Free.
Burning down the bridges in my mind where I've been hurt, leaving the past behind. I'm getting stronger every day, got a new life. I'm moving on. Forgive and walk free. Tomorrow's a brand new day. Life goes on, and the things that happen won't keep me locked inside. I'm breaking the shackles. Breaking the chains, I'm starting a new life without any blame. Not looking back on my mistakes, it's too late to call back. Yesterday, win or lose, I'll stand tall. Time has healed those painful memories. Forgive and walk free. Tomorrow's a brand new day. Life goes. Faces, I can see the flesh and blood, saints and sinners, brothers and sisters, we're all the same, not perfect, just human. Break. and walk free.